What number is this, Chip?
Zilch 192. Andrew Sandoval. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how you doing?
This episode is The Monkeys on TV Season 1, the book. You should buy it.
Okay.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
Look, it's time for Zilch now, baby. Gonna have a ball.
Welcome back to Zilch, your podcast full of monkeys. I am Ken Mills, one of your hosts here today, and I'm joined by someone that should be no stranger to anyone who is a monkeys fan. If so, you're living under a rock, and we bring the wonderful Andrew Sandoval back to Zilch. So glad to have you here, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And under such auspicious circumstances, I don't know when people will be hearing this, but they will be nearing the 60th anniversary of the release of the first ever Monkees record, Last Train to Clarksville, which they say was issued on August 16th, 1966.
So this is that weekend, the anniversary here. And not only that, we are seeing, you know, speaking of your book, The Monkees on TV Season 1, we are seeing something happening that fans have been clamoring for the longest time. The Monkees are on Tubi.
Yes, literally
Tubi clamoring. Or not to be.
It's literally clamoring for decades. I don't know how it got unstuck from where it was stuck for ages and ages, but people are enjoying it. They're watching the show again, and you know, what could go wrong with that, right?
Exactly. Well, as long as they keep it up, we'll love it. You know, I'd like to ask you a question because I don't think I ever really did this with you. As many times as you've been on the show, I don't think we've ever actually done this. How did you become a Monkees fan? Can you take me back to the Andrew Sandoval origin story?
Sure. Yeah, I'm surprised that we haven't done this. I feel like I've told it before, but I'm happy to tell it again. And what happened was I grew up here in Los Angeles, where I'm speaking from right now. And the Monkees came on in reruns. This was circa 1977, I seem to recall. I was five, and it was shown on local KTTV, Channel 11 here. And they would show them. They looked a lot like the 16 millimeter dark prints that sort of circulated on VHSs later on. But I started seeing the show, and I was really taken by the music. I was already a fan of the Beatles and sort of gathering up Beatles records. I had my own little turntable, which you can look at online. If you look up Mickey Mouse turntable, it's sort of like a suitcase thing, and Mickey Mouse's little arm under his white sleeve is the needle. So his arm is the tone arm. But that was my first record player. And what happened was I was watching the show. I had no idea that Arista had issued a Monkees Greatest Hits album, or that would be available in stores. My parents, I was pestering them constantly, not for new toys, but for more records. That was my thing. It's always been my thing, and it continues to be my thing. And though my parents are gone, I just pester myself now for more records. anyway, so my dad went to a used record shop and tried to buy some Monkees records. And he saw a guy actually trying to trade them in. And they said, yeah, we don't take those here. It wasn't because the Monkees were so, vilified at the time. It was because those records had sold in the millions and they had no resale value in the mid-70s. Perhaps the later ones did, I don't know. But those early records, I had the first five Monkees albums growing up. I didn't know they had an album after Birds, Bees, and the Monkees when I was five or six. And when I finally got a book called Rock Encyclopedia by Lillian Roxon, I found out they had an album called Instant Replay. I never saw those records till the 80s. So, but I had those records because my dad followed the guy out of the store, went to meet him in his car, and he bought those records for me, and then I had them. So, and I loved those records, and I loved them like I loved the Beatles records, and then I got into all the other fantastic artists that I love to this day, and the Monkees included. So that's my story. But when the show came back on MTV, obviously it reignited my interest in the Monkees, and I bought the Monkees Tale book by Eric Lefkowitz, which was the first real book on the Monkees, and read all of that, devoured that. Then I devoured the Monkees scrapbook, which had a sessionography listing, and I ruminated over the many unissued songs that were listed, and then I got Ed Reilly and Maggie McManus's book, A Manufactured Image, and I got extraordinarily excited about the even more detailed listing of unreleased songs in there. Of course, they had an episode guide in there and a day-by-day chronology of the Monkees, which was also inspirational. In 1987, I bought a book by Mark Lewisohn called The Beatles Recording Sessions, and he too had a day-by-day account of their recording sessions. And it was my goal. I met him that year at a Beatles convention, and he was very nice. And it was my goal sometime after that to do something similar on the Monkees, because I started. What happened was the Monkees just sort of stayed in my life. I didn't really chase the Monkees. The Monkees just it just kept coming to me, like you know, do this and do that. So
It's like, Davey and Mickey and everybody has said that the monkeys are like the mafia. They just keep pulling you back in.
yes. I look both ways before I cross anybody's mind these days. So what happened was I interviewed Davy Jones when I was 16 for I had a music fanzine, and he was the first of the Monkees that I interviewed. I'd met the Monkees. I'd met Mickey, Davy, and Peter at an in-store for Pool It in 1987. And that was interesting. And, you know, interviewed Davy the following year. And then after that, I was interested in reissue records, and I met Bill Inglot, who was working for Rhino. I thought what they were doing with Live in 67 and Missing Links was fantastic, and
Yes.
I didn't ever dream that I would be a part of it, but I became a part of it really, really quite rapidly. So in 1989, I penned the liner notes for Missing Links Volume 2 and ended up co-compiling and co-producing it with Bill Inglot, and it came out in January of 1990. So that's the story of when it began for me with the Monkees, and then shortly thereafter in 91, when I did the list of the band box set, that was the first indication of what I had planned for my book with the sessionography, the listings of the session musicians. That stuff had never been anywhere in print before in any previous book. And also, I interviewed all four of the Monkees at that point, including Michael Nesmith. And so that was my first entree into getting to know them, and I got to know them much better over the next, you know, many, many yester decades. So that's the story.
That is a very cool origin story. It may not be as cool as the one I had in headcanon for you, because mine was you were bitten by a radioactive monkey and you eventually became one of the fifth monkey men. So
Well, I still have a fever dream that literally when I was about 5 or 6, I had a fever of like 106, and I remember like convalescing, like just being really woozy, and then seeing the Monkees TV show on Channel 11, seeing Peter Tork, and little did I know I would be, you know, spending so much time with these people for a long time. And you know, we'll get to the book in a second, but I'll just say that getting to do this book meant that I got to revisit those memories, those personal memories, which are not in the book because it's not a personal book.
right.
It's personally important to me that the history is out there, but I got to revisit, you know, many funny things, incidents with Peter and Nez and Davey and stuff. Just hilarious stuff. Those guys were just amazing, so funny, and you know, off screen and just in everyday life, it's no wonder they were the Monkees. That's the thing I get to really in this book is it starts out with a story that I do tell one personal story in the introduction, which is I was standing with Bert Schneider, who was the co-creator of the Monkees with Bob Rafelson, on the occasion of Rhino handing over a check to Bert and Bob and Steve Blauner for the purchase of the Monkees catalog. And I was there and Bill Inglot was there, and we were allowed to talk to them and ask them questions in as part of the due diligence of purchasing the catalog, like Where are the films? Where are the outtakes from Head? I asked them all kinds of things, but Bert and I were standing in the sort of reception area of Rhino, and at the time Rhino was decorated with all these big blow-ups of photos of different artists that they had got from Michael Oakes' archives. They had a good relationship with Michael Oakes, and they said, "Yeah, we want to decorate our place." So they made these gigantic blow-ups of different artists. So they had like the Turtles and the Rascals and those sorts of people. It wasn't necessarily just people who were on the label, it was people also that they admired, because Richard Foos and Harold Bronson are huge music fans to this day. I just competed on a charity trivia team with them for the City of Hope a few weeks ago, so I keep in touch with them. But so I was standing with Bert Schneider, and he said to me, he goes, "Hey, who are these guys?" And he was pointing to, it was either the Rascals or the Turtles. And I said, "Oh, that's the Turtles or that's the Rascals or whatever." He goes, "Yeah, well, I could have done it with any four guys." And I didn't say anything. I was really like struck. I was kind of dumbstruck. And I go into in my book that Bert's reasoning for saying that was sort of more bravado and guilt than reality. And the reality is that it couldn't have been any other four guys, and that as much credit as is due to Mike, Mickey, Davey, and Peter for being those four guys, Bert and Bob were the guys who picked them. And they could have picked some seasoned actors, some seasoned musicians. They had them in their midst. They had Stephen Stills, they had Van Dyke Parks, they had, Jerry Yester, they had, all kinds of people who they could have picked, but they picked these guys. And when you see the screen tests of these guys, the camera tests, with the other players mixed in with Bill Chadwick, and no disrespect to Bill or any of the other fine people who were up there, these four guys pop off the screen, and it's just like, well, of course these other guys are wrong. Those four other four guys are these are the monkeys. So to
Right.
me,
It all clicks.
it all clicks. So that's what this book brought home to me is these four guys, Mike, Mickey, Davey, and Peter, not only became sort of our friends, though we didn't know them personally. They developed this relationship with each other and with their audience that is undefinable, I think. And 60 years on, here we are talking about it. And it's a great joy to me. Every day that I worked on this book was such a joy. It was wonderful to wake up and say, "I'm going to watch Royal Flush again today." And but the thing is, I had monkey scripts in my time. I'm not the level of collectors at Riley or some of the other people online, and I say that because I really respect and admire them. I call them and say, "Hey, do you know about this or what is this?" And they always have some sort of insight into it, and I love that. So, but what happened was stuff like the other things started falling in my lap. I've been collecting all this data on the days the monkeys were shooting or recording or whatever, and it's still incomplete when I was doing the revised version of the monkeys day by day story in 2020 during the lockdown. I asked people, "Do you have call sheets? Do you have this or that?" And stuff came out of the woodwork that I wouldn't have believed, like these depositions and other things that totally rewrote the story for me. So again, this was another rewrite of the story. I saw some scripts on eBay, and what attracted me to them was that they had costume sheets in them about what costumes the monkeys were using, and they had some shooting schedules. So I was like, well, I gotta have those because I want to know that. Someday I'll do something with a TV show where I can put these to use. This was about 3 years ago. And what occurred was it was a local seller, and I paid a lot of money for the scripts. I don't know, $500, $600 a piece or something. It was a lot of money, but it was like an investment in the future. I knew I could do something and I'd share the information with people. I physically having the script was really secondary to like, I want to know this stuff about the monkeys and the show. So I met this guy in the parking lot of a drugstore to do the handoff because, it had the option where you could get pick up personally, but he's like, "Yeah, I don't know who you are." So we met, and my main thing was also on eBay. They don't allow you to ask many questions because that's going to kind of mess them out of a sale. If you make a direct connection with somebody and they directly sell to you, then I don't have to tell you that A, you're not protected, but B, the dealer can keep more of the money, and the buyer can maybe get access to some stuff the dealer wasn't thinking about. But anyway, I want to say to this guy, hey, I'm really into this. Where did you get these? And he said, oh, I went to a estate sale in Eagle Rock, which is like a town not far outside of LA in the suburbs. And he goes, there's stacks of these things. I didn't know anybody wanted them. I just picked up a few. This was all I grabbed on the way out. Had I known, I would have bought them all, because obviously some people want these. So I put the word out online and I said, hey, I've got friends who go to estate sales all the time. All my friends collect vintage stuff. So I said, hey, if anybody went to an estate sale and saw Monkey Scripts or has any leads on this, I'm really curious, because there's pieces of the history I didn't know that's in these, And I never saw another script from the Eagle Rock estate sale, but many other people said, hey, I have some script, and this person has a script. And then I started searching for them online and buying up other ones. And one day I was looking through some stuff, and somebody was showing me some things to appraise, and there was paperwork from the original screenwriters on how to write a monkey script. Unpublished information, a diagram of the monkey's pad, where to write for a monkey script in the monkey's pad. Here are the different areas you can write. Here's how your script should be set up. Each script needs to be set up in four sections: teaser, act one, act two, and tag. Now, when we watch the shows, those are the natural sections in almost all 58 episodes. But it had never been defined that way to me previously. And all of a sudden, I was in this world. And then I had other friends who are like, at UCLA, they've got the papers of Gardner and Caruso. At the Writers Guild, they've got some other papers of Gardner and Caruso. And I started looking at story drafts, and then some story drafts came up on eBay. So the whole thing just sort of just presented itself to me like, Andrew, you need to tell this story about the Monkees TV show in your book. You've got all the stuff about all the recording sessions. You talk to the engineers, you talk to the producers. The people who did the TV show are not really around anymore, except for Dave Evans and Mickey. But here's all of this data that's irrefutable. This is something you should do. This is what these are the voices in my head. So I felt the calling to do this book, The Monkees on TV, and I thought, oh well, I'll do all the shows, the 58 shows. Well, it turned out that there wasn't just one version of each of the scripts. There's multiples, and they all have different characters, and they have different plot lines, and there's all this whole world, that an alternate reality of the monkeys that we didn't know, and that's what's in this book. It's so you could watch it with the episodes, find out what they had originally planned, find out how they got to where they were, and lots of other details. Everything I've learned in the 40 years of chasing this story. And it's fascinating to me. That's why I'm so excited about it, because it's like, what could be new under the sun for the monkey story and it's like a gift, like, wow, this thing that I've known for all these years, there is something else to know. And now I've not only learned it myself, but I have it's at the printer, so it's ready to, to be shared with everybody, and I feel really great about it.
Well, your book, The Monkees on TV Season 1, it looks very interesting. You've always taken time to try to make sure that there is like these are always deluxe books as far as I'm concerned. Anything you've put out, it's always been as best as you can make it and make it special for the fan. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's part of it too, because in order to make it work with the cost of the printing and licensing the photos from the different agencies that represent these photos, and also fans and stuff like that have graciously allowed me access to their collection. But in order to make it all work, the only reasonable business solution is to do these deluxe books for me. Now, I know for a lot of other people, they'd be like, well, why can't you just do some cheap thing. And I'm like, there's lots of cheap things, you know, but this is a special thing. This is how I want to see the history preserved. And, you know, because I'm taking the gamble and the risk on doing it, you know, I get to decide how it's presented. And I think the monkeys deserve this. I think the monkeys are as important as every other 60s music artist, or more so in some cases. So, the Beatles and the Stones and the Who all have amazing stuff, and now the Monkees do too.
So, what can you tell me about the book? I know that the pre-orders ship in November 10th of 2026, correct?
That's correct. Yes, that's the date that they've given us so far. So, you know, if it comes a little early, we'd be very, very grateful. Anything I can do to push it along, I always try and get it out. The last book I think we had, you know, they always come in within a few days of the promised date. And if there's ever like during the only problem book was the first one, the Day by Day, because during the pandemic, I don't know if you remember, but there were all these boats stuck out in the port of Long Beach that couldn't come in with all of, besides the monkeys books, actual things the people needed to exist as well, the like paper towels and, you know, whatever else they were getting from, you know, shipped in. So that was the only big hang up. So now I've have a lot more experience with this. So I'll be bugging them every day when I can get these books out. And also we have professional fulfillment. And if anybody has a problem with any of their books, I've got a good reputation out there. You know, if you say, hey, my book came and it was all smashed up, you know, I've got a wonderful customer service person and we'll make it right. You know, we know that this is a big investment for you, and we respect you, and we respect that, you know, you're supporting this project. So I'm grateful to everybody who's pre-ordered already. And for those who haven't, we'll have a special zilch discount,
Ooh.
because I feel like, you know, what happens now is we pay. It's funny, we use MailChimp. I only mention that not as a plug, but more because it's, you know, got to be monkeys related, right? So, but it means that we blast out to like 7,000 or so people, but not everybody opens the emails because, you know, it gets in the spam folder, or they're like, yeah, what's, you know, I don't need that or whatever, and they don't know it's a new book. So part of the way of letting people know is you graciously said you would come out of retirement one more time for me and help spread the word on this book. And that's just wonderful. And I know a lot of people listening won't even be plugged into what's happening online. They may not never heard about this book. So I'm really excited about talking about it with you. And we'll have a zilch discount code that we'll give everybody.
Fantastic. Now, this book comes in two different formats. This Monkeys on TV season one. Would you explain those for us?
Sure. So there is the regular version, which is called a flexi bound, which some people have bought my other books like The Day by Day Story or Mickey's I'm Told I Had a Good Time or Joe Russo's Smoke Filled Dreams will know now is sort of a soft cover, but a really high-end soft cover where you can kind of it's a sewn binding so that the, you know, the glue doesn't fall apart and the pages fall out or anything. It's sewn together, so it's really durable. And you can lay it flat so you can see all the information of the photos that's in the sort of the center. And so that's the FlexiBound edition. And this book is 536 pages. And I believe you have the data on how many photos are in there. It's like it's hundreds of photos. Is it more than 200, I think? I don't have it all off the top of my head, but there's color and black and white images from the shooting of the series, you know, production stills, and then also behind the scenes stills, some unpublished for sure. And then also call sheets, cue sheets, you know, l with listing all the various Stu Phillips, you know, 3 seconds of this song, you know, all that sort of stuff is in there. And then some of these other pieces of ephemera relating to the TV show. So that's all in this main book, the FlexiBound book. There's also a hardbound edition of that book, which comes signed and numbered, and that's limited to 1,200 copies worldwide. And that comes in a slip cover with a second book called The Monkey's Pilot, and that's about 200 pages, and it's a really unusual thing because I was trying to figure out a bonus book, and as I've gone on with these projects, the bonus content has become more elaborate. So the last book I did was on the band The Kinks, and we did a scrapbook because there's all this extra sheet music and newspaper clippings and things that didn't fit in the main book, which was 600 something pages. So in this book, which is already 500 pages, which is really a lot. And that's what also the other reason why it's not season one and season two. It's because I'd have had to take out a lot of season one in order to accommodate, squeeze it all into one book.
Right.
And there's also another reason, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But so this pilot book, what it is in my research on the pilot, what I found was that the pilot had been documented by an uncredited photographer whose photos have passed into a few different collections, and you've seen them lots of places, but you've never seen all of them in one place. And there was a set of proof sheets that captured all of them. And so this book
Wow.
merely reproduces all of those proof sheets with hundreds and hundreds of photos from the pilot, ones you've seen, ones you haven't seen, and again, in really nice quality. Some of them are not perfect. Some of them we've been able to go back to the collectors who have the original negatives now in their collections, and they graciously have allowed us to reproduce some of the images. And we've gone to Getty for a few things, and we've gone to Alamy for a few things, but this is the only complete record of how they produced the pilot, like in photos. And it's all, except for the end papers, is all black and white. It's sort of like there's no other documentation of it. There's no paperwork for it. There are no outtakes from the pilot. This is it. So this is a, it's a very, very substantial piece of history that you get. And the pilot is, though, covered in the main book in two different chapters. There's a chapter on the unaired pilot, and then the aired version and the differences between the two.
Wow. There are two different versions of The Monkees on TV season one. The first is a FlexiBound edition, which is limited to 800 units worldwide. The second is a limited hardbound edition of 1,200 units worldwide. One.
Right.
And I'm going to read some of this. And I'm psyched that it's 11 by 11 because it'll fit right with your records. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, I love that when I get a Beatles book or a Monkees book or whatever, that I can just slide right in there. It's perfect. It's fantastic. Now, we're going to mention these are the stats for the glossy slipcase edition, the two limited edition books. 11 by 11 limited hardbound edition of 1,200 units worldwide, individually numbered and signed by the man with the cramped hands, Andrew Sandoval, because that's a lot of signing that you'll be doing there. The season one book is 536 pages, and that applies to both versions, right?
Right.
And it is heavily illustrated, featuring more than 200 photographs, 72 color and 140 in glorious black and white, plus 74 images of rare documents and other memorable spanning the years of 1965 to 1967. And I'm so sad that the word ephemera was not in there, pictures of ephemera, you know, but because you love saying that word, you love saying that word.
Yeah.
Season one book covers the 32 first season episodes of the Monkees series with detailed analysis by Andrew Sandoval, that guy right there, of original draft scripts, call sheets, cue sheets, and production schedules. Features more than 100 rare images, documents, and memorabilia, and I'm going to just put ephemera there, okay? Spanning 1965 and 1967. The pilot book from the deluxe set features more than 200 pages of rare images shot in November 1965 during the production of the Monkees pilot episode. Both books are housed in a unique glossy outer slipcover printed on high quality 157 GSM matte paper, packaged in a decorative outer cardboard box and shipped in a second box for a safe worldwide transport. So that is something. That's pretty sharp. Now, do you want to discuss the pricing on these or?
Sure, the pre-order pricing has just ended, but if you want to use a coupon with the name of Zilch 15, you can get $15 off of any of the Monkees books. I'll just say, because I also feel like a lot of people didn't even know there was the Mickey book or the Smoke-Filled Dreams, because it's been a chaotic time for a lot of people. So come to the store, check out what we've got. We have the Monkees Day by Day story still. I have some had some complaints over the years. People say, "Well, you said you'd only ever make the Monkey's Day by Day story once, and I said, yes, I did. And I said it on Zilch podcast of the hardbound. So I've never redone the deluxe or the super deluxe of that book, and I've kept my promise and I won't. But the Flexi Bound, there's still about 100 copies left of that. And, to put it in perspective, we did about 4,000 units of that book, and they're far fewer of this book. The people are have had burnout on life and the monkeys and things like that. My only discouragement in all that is sometimes when people say, well, I'm not buying this, I'm burned out, no one should buy this. And it's like, oh, come on, don't make people feel bad about, still loving the monkeys or wanting to have other monkey stuff. So come to the store, check it out. And the prices, I think the FlexiBound price, the retail price, although it's not at retail, is like $99.99 right now. It's still at a discount, and then you can take the $15 off, which is pretty much what you'd pay for the media mail shipping. Now, outside of the US, it's a terrible situation for everybody outside of the US because shipping is so expensive. And it's not me who's taking the money, it's the shippers. It's everything has gone up in price. And what you're paying for is what it costs to ship the book. And in some cases, it's more than the book itself. And, I'm sure there's a solution to that, which is raising the price of the book, so it doesn't seem like you're paying more for the shipping. But the reality is I can't do that. Everything has gone up in the last 5 years, 5, 6 years. We've all seen it, except these Beatland books, which started out as pricey, have remained the same price more or less as the first one I did. So I haven't raised my price, but the price of shipping has gone up and I can't control that. And I feel terrible about it. And people say, well, why don't you just ship a bunch over to Australia or the UK or Japan? It's a great idea. I'd still have to pay for the shipping, and then you'd have to pay for it too, unless you just want unless you want me to spend even more on this book than I already have. So that's my conundrum. I feel bad, but we have some very loyal customers, and they still buy them and they get them and they're really happy, and there's also, like, if you can't pay for it all at once, you can pay it off. And if there's a problem, and you do get charged for it at the time of when buying, because you're making a commitment to buy a limited edition item. These are not items that are going to be perpetually in print. So I get that all of it's a bit of a concern, and I just want you to know that I appreciate your sale, and I want to make you happy, and I hope that you're going to like this book. But it's like any other collectible item. I always tell people, like, I just bought, 2 45s from the UK, which weighed a combined 7 ounces, and I got charged 20 British pounds for that.
Ouch.
So, sending out a book that weighs 15 pounds, not British pounds, but 15 pounds, I don't know what the kilograms are,
Right.
that costs like three times that to ship. That's you're actually getting a much better value than I am. But you know what? I wanted those singles. I can't get them anywhere else. And this book is not available on Amazon. It's not available anywhere else. If I do those things, if I make it available in those ways, like some of the photos I can't make available digitally, that's part of my deal, how I got them in the book. And then also, if I make it available on Amazon, I'd have to dumb down the book. I'd have to take out a couple hundred pages. I'd have to make it more of a mainstream sort of thing. I've done that all my life. I don't want to do that anymore, So if it means
Right.
that 1,000 people less are going to buy the book, that's okay. The people who are going to get it are really going to be happy, I think. And it's life choices, but just if you buy it, know that I really, really do appreciate it.
So, Monkeys on TV Season 1, you can go to Beatland Books, beatlandbooks.myshopify.com. You want to get there and you'll see other things there. You'll see the Kinks book, you'll see the Monkeys Day by Day. You'll see I was there and I'm told I had a good time. You'll be seeing Smoke-Filled Dreams, the Unseen Archive of Joe Russo. So all of that is available to you, and it's a good way to use the coupon code ZILCH15 to get $15 off of your order. So there you go. Now, as far as how this book, you kind of outlined how it came to be and all of that, but I'd like to hear about how you structured the book. What was your idea behind it, as far as laying it out?
Sure. So the book has 35 chapters. There's 32 episodes in the first season, and obviously there's a chapter for each of those episodes. The additional three chapters are perhaps the most fascinating to me because I got to do some new writing about Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider, that I went in to explore their origin story. You know, people sort of have this feeling, well, Bert's dad was the head of Columbia Pictures, you know, he's a Nepo baby, and Bob is this guy, whatever. I decided, you know, like with my other monkeys writing, why just go with the common folk tales? Why not go back and try and find something else out? So I found out a bit more about his dad's involvement in Columbia Pictures, which really goes to the origin of Columbia Pictures itself as a thing. And then they're delving into television. You know, people don't remember this probably, but there was a time when TV was seen as the unsightly kid brother to movies. Movies were the great thing, and TV was bad. You know,
yeah, TV was where you went to slum it after you were crashing out in feature films.
Yeah, so
or Broadway. Yeah,
so it, you know, in a lot of the movie studios, this gets into a whole other area that's not the monkeys, but it still ties into it. You know, Warner Brothers, you'd see like the Warner Theater and things like that. All these places, they owned the big movie studios owned movie theaters and other things. Now, Columbia Pictures was a little different. They didn't do that, but it was very much a family business. And somebody in the family had like a TV business, and they decided reluctantly that they would buy this TV business and they would rename it Screen Gems, and that it wouldn't be called Columbia Pictures TV or anything. It would be Screen Gems. So it would have a different name. But by the 1960s, Screen Gems was making more money than Columbia Pictures was with their films. And the guy who was the head of Screen Gems was originally their treasurer when the Columbia Pictures started out. And he became the head of Columbia when the founders died. And his name was Abe Schneider, and that was Bert Schneider's dad. And Bert had labored away at Screen Gems and Columbia for 10 years, like working as the treasurer, working as this guy's assistant, whatever. He wasn't handed an executive job or anything. He had to leave the company to make his own TV show. And initially, they tried to develop two other film projects that didn't get off the boards in 65. And then the third thing was The Monkees. So I've got a chapter called From Monkees to Monkees. And it's the M-O-K-E-Y-S to M-O-K-E-E-S. And it tells the story about how they got from, you know, in that 10-year period from 55 to 65, how they got from point A to point B. And also tells a lot about Bob Rafelson. So then you get a chapter on the unaired pilot. And there are two scripts for the unaired pilot, one where with different names for the characters, and then one revised one where there's, you know, Peter and Mickey and Woolhat. Mike's name is Woolhat in all of the early scripts, sometimes all spelled as one word with no space. So that's interesting. So comparison of those two scripts plus a comparison directly to the what's in the TV show and the pilot, the unaired one. So what I found interesting was I'd always had this hunch that there was probably more material in those scripts, and there's a ton in all of them, and many discarded ideas. But you also get to see what is the monkey's input. How did they take the material and change it for the screen? So
shape it.
And so it's a very interesting thing because, you know, we've all heard the tale that, oh, well, the scripts were just a jumping off point. You know, we did these romps and none of them were scripted. And I think that maybe in season two, that's more the case. But in season one, Davey, Mickey, and Peter stuck very closely to the written word in the scripts. Mike veered off and personalized nearly everything from the first script on. And Mickey joined him, and then they got a little bit looser towards the final episodes of season one. The other thing was, you know, Jim Frawley, who I interviewed a few different times, would say, well, you know, we made up the romps as we went along. Well, what I found out in the scripts was a lot of the romps were scripted out. They may not be exact on the screen, but you'll find out exactly what they intended in the romps. And some of the sight gags and things, I never understood what they meant until I saw these scripts. I just thought they're clowning around having a good time, but it's like there's actually intent on like a narrative in some of these romps. And then there's romps that they scripted out that they never did. So it's as if you got to visit every library and everybody's collection who had these different scripts and put them all together. And that's what I got to do. Because there's no filing cabinet at Sony Pictures or anywhere else
Right.
Rhino that has all these scripts. No one has a complete collection. When we were doing Mickey's book, we went through his scripts looking for different stuff to reproduce, and he didn't have a complete set of the scripts. So this is the only complete sort of survey of those materials that exists anywhere. And it's not in any other book. So, and that makes me feel good because it means that I got to do something that I'm not just, rehashing something.
In a
And
sense, this is for you as well. You know
it
what I
is for
mean?
me. I want to, this is, I've always been a seeker of knowledge, of wanting to know about this stuff, very specific stuff, whether it's important to other people or not, but some people have joined me and they want to know too. So I loved doing this. And the other reason why I didn't do season two in this book, A, I ran out of space, but B, I'm still missing a couple of the scripts, of which I know at least one of them is out there in the world because it was auctioned off at one point. Mostly people buy them for like because they're autographed or whatever, or they get them autographed, and they're nice souvenirs and stuff like that. They never think about like, well, the contents of it might have
This
some.
is history.
So, and that's the other thing is, as I told everybody who graciously allowed me access to the scripts, I don't need to own the scripts. I'm not collecting the scripts. I'm only collecting the information. So keep your scripts, but if you have scripts from season two, get in touch with me at monkeysbook@gmail.com. Chances are I have most of it, but I'm still missing two or three scripts. And what I found when I said, "Oh yeah, I've got all those," I found, well, this person had one with a different date and different material and a different revisions. And those could be a gold mine of stuff, as I found. And there's a lot in the book with that. I also got access to original story drafts, which were substantially different, like Monkey See, Monkey Die. The original story draft for that, the premise is so much better than the final episode. It's so much more creative. I understand why they went into the direction they did, and it's a classic still, but it's like you get the insight into like, well, this is what the writers originally planned. Because sometimes you'll say, well, this is kind of banal. Well, they sort of had to dumb some of the stuff down for TV and also condense it down so it would fit into those four different bits: the teaser, act one, act two, and the tag. So that's the story behind all of that.
Wow, that's a lot. Now, you said teaser. What did the industry also call out a stinger for some TV shows? You know what I mean? That
No.
opening bit before the
Yeah, it could be. I just know the terminology because the other thing was that originally there were teams of writers employed for the first season, and they were all under the tutelage of Gardner Caruso. Now, Paul Mazursky and Larry Tucker, two rather famous screenwriters, had done the pilot, but they fell out with
Right.
Bob Rufus and Bert Schneider over ownership of the name The Monkees. And so the other chapter I haven't talked about, which is called Here They Come, gets into that. It gets not just in a lawsuit, but more like I lay a case to why I think that Raybert are really the originators of the Monkees, and where I feel that they deserve the credit for not only picking these four guys, but also making a lot of other choices that made it a unique show and one that lasts to this day. And in follow-up to what I was talking about with my conversation with Bert Schneider, I talked with him and met him a few other times, and we had much more insightful conversations. But he had a very different viewpoint on the monkeys and a very unique insight. But his family were averse to publicity. They did not like to do interviews, and that also rubbed off on the monkeys. He said, "Oh, the monkeys shouldn't do any interviews," and then the press got mad at them, and that's part of how they got s stuck with this. They don't play their own instruments, and they don't get along. They don't th this and that. But that was part of the original sort of Schneider credo, which was, don't court the press, just do what you do quietly, and let people see what you do. And that kind of backfired a little bit. So So they hired Gerald Gardner and Dee Caruso to supervise all of these mostly first-time writers. And you get to find out what Gardner Caruso's template was and their game plan from all the paperwork I found. And so that's all in that chapter. And then you get into, those 32 episodes from Royal Flush to the Monkeys on Tour. Monkeys on Tour is the only episode in which I did not have a script, and I don't believe a script existed for in the first season, because it was a documentary and made up by Bob Rafelson. And sort of an interesting story behind it that Bert Schneider felt, well, we spent so much money making these 35 millimeter episodes at Columbia Pictures. It cost so much money to make them. If we could make some cheaper episodes, that would really help us amortize. And so they made Monkeys on Tour, mostly with people who didn't work on the series. And, people wondered about the intro where you see Davey introducing the show and you see the other guys coming out with their fake beards on, which are covering their real beards because they're in the middle of making headquarters. Well, they're on the set of Bewitched. And the reason why is because they were working with people who worked on Bewitched for that show. They weren't working with their regular team because they were all on hiatus. Monkeys were making headquarters. Everybody else was on hiatus, and they were going to be back to making new episodes for season two in April. So that's the story.
Well, this might sound weird and going off base here, but that bit where they come out and they're in the beards and everything, it reminded me of the scene in Help where they're going to the Bahamas. The Beatles are going to the Bahamas and they're not letting it around what they're doing, you know.
Sure.
And the weird thing about that is that we see what the Beatles would later look like in 1974 or 1970 or 1972. But I always thought that when I saw that as a kid, I thought, oh, that's them trying to do something like that, even though, you know, it was just my understanding as a child. You talked about Gardner and Caruso and Raybert. It was also Raybert that took that pilot that got the failing grades and figured out how to make it a winner.
Yes, they did. And you also in the book, I go into more detail about the audience studies incorporated, the people who did the survey and sort of the backstory on how Screen Gems, basically, it wasn't enough for Bert's dad to be the head of Columbia Pictures and Screen Gems. Unless they could get a passing score from this machine that was attached to like 200 people recording their thoughts and impulses, there was going to be no Monkees show. His dad could not make it happen just as a vanity project. So they had to figure out a way to do it, and Bob Rafelson ultimately did. It's so that in itself is interesting. And Gardner and Caruso came from Get Smart and doing a lot of work with Buck Henry, and Buck Henry had gone to college with Bob Rafelson. There's just a lot of other connections. The book also has sort of beyond just the analysis of the scripts, has cast notes and crew notes and music notes about the versions of the songs that are in the show, the reruns for each episode. And one thing it doesn't have is, there's a lot of great websites out there. There's like IMDb where you can look up and you find out every role that this person played. And my book does not reiterate every single thing. Like they were in this, and then they were in Happy Days, and then they were on Laverne and Shirley, and then they were on Bewitched. And it's like, because you can get all that stuff online. So I was very mindful of, not just copying that stuff. And also, there's two fantastic websites. Aaron Handy has maintained this Monkees film and TV vault thing for decades, and that's been a great go-to for me. It's a great starting point for me. And then I'm always
Yes.
thinking, what can I do to try and impress Aaron Handy? What am I going to dig up that's not on his site? Not to one up him, but more like, hey, this guy's done the work. I respect this man. I want to do something that's gonna up the game, And another one I love is Cool Cherry Cream, where they have screen caps of all the episodes. It's a
Love that site.
great first stop for me of like, okay, well, it's there. And then I go back to the episodes and I watch these episodes. Let me tell you something. It's obvious to me that there are people who are really into the episodes, and I've always felt like, God, everybody knows more about the episodes than I do. The recording sessions, I've been through every session tape, every mix reel. I started out when I was a teenager, getting to talk to all these people who are still alive. the TV show, I didn't spend as much time researching it. So I feel people, I really, really figured out a lot of stuff about it. But I did preside over the restoration of it for the original VHS box. And then its next iteration for the DVD box. And then again, 10 years ago for the Blu-ray box, I was involved in that. So I've watched the show in detail many, many times, not just as a fan, but as a professional. And this time I didn't rely on my memory or anything else. I watched the show as though it were brand new to me and tried to look at it with fresh eyes at every detail I could find. That's why this book is so much fun, you know, for me. I hope that people will get it and they'll look at the show with fresh eyes and renewed interest.
Fantastic. By the way, while we're giving shout outs, there's also Craig and Derek's great website, Monkey's Mixology.
Yes, indeed. And Derek is actually was my research assistant on this book because, again, I feel that he and Craig have done more in the realm of figuring out things as far as the different mixes. I may have been through all of those tapes, but they've really looked at where all the stuff has ended up and all the different mixes I've done and Bill Inglot's done and whatnot over the years. I confer with them all the time. And in this case, Derek graciously worked with me on the breakdowns of the different songs for the episodes. And then I had cue sheets too, which have never been made public, that gave me further insights beyond the stuff that was accessible to Derek. And then I would go to Derek for certain other things and be like, in this episode, can you run this side by side with this? This looks similar to this. And then he would give me his data on that. So he's been a fantastic help on this book. And I so to respect him and Ed Reilly and Maggie McManus, the sort of the founders of this sort of organized fandom for the Monkees, just incredibly generous with their photo library and all that it all the history that it has. So there's a good amount of that in the book. And Joe Russo, of course, too, who's got an incredible photo library and was incredibly helpful. And his Monkees Pad YouTube show, some of the interviews, like the one with Dave Evans. I mean, I've known Dave Evans for years. He's such a nice guy, but there's some great stuff in those interviews. I certainly went to other interviews, like Rosemary's interview with Zilch. I
Yes.
referenced that in the book too. I
Oh.
didn't just draw on my interviews, which there are a lot. I felt like, you know, other people got to talk to these actors and crew people and, you know, got great stuff out of them.
Fantastic. Do you care if I give a shout out to a couple other people?
Sure.
I want to shout out to Melanie Mitchell, another great book about the TV show. It's
Yes.
a real fun read, Monkey's Magic. Then you've got Roseanne Walsh's book, which was really cool. Her book, Why the Monkeys Matter, Teenagers Television. It is such a good book. And then our good friend Peter Mills with his book, The Monkey's Head in the 60s. So those are some of my favorite go-to books over the last few years to kind of piggyback off of a lot of the work that you've done, for example.
Yeah. Well, it takes everybody to do this. I
Exactly.
don't feel like, well, I should be the only one. I should be the only voice in the Monkees fan community. So I love seeing people and discovering stuff, and that's why I'm hanging in there, like keeping healthy to try and see what else we can find. Melanie in particular was really gracious and helped me with a few of the scripts in this book. She had done her own script to screen analysis, so I was able to access a few elements that I was missing from her, and she's really nice about it. I purposely didn't read her analysis because I didn't want to copy anything.
Right, right, right.
And you know, Roseanne's original article in the Writers Guild magazine was also something I referenced, of course. And I also need to say Gary Strobel. And Gary
Yes,
Strobel again,
yes.
because you know, Gary has been such a generous soul. And when I started doing this book, he too contributed some scripts. Another guy named Tony Fornaro, who's a longtime Monkees fan, helped me out with another script. And Elliot Marks and a few. There's a whole list of people. So thank you. But Gary had some great paperwork on when all the scripts were contracted and when all the directing assignments were given out. and what everybody was paid and whatnot. So yeah, it was a beautiful journey, this one. And I so hope that it carries through so I can do the season two book.
Well, I believe that it will 100% beyond a shadow of a doubt. I'd be shocked if it didn't. A couple questions I have is you mentioned that, Gardner and Crusoe were brought in for these reasons. Was there ever, a lot of times when I am doing reading about TV shows, they'll say that they had a Bible. Was there ever a monkey's Bible in the sense that this is what a monkey show has to have? Or do you know what I'm
Yes.
saying?
Yes, absolutely. And so I found the Bible in a private collection. It wasn't at UCLA with D. Caruso's papers there. It wasn't at the Writers Guild. It was in a private collection. I found the Bible. I was able to transcribe it, and the Bible for the Monkey Show, which is fairly concise, is reproduced in full in my
Oh,
book.
wow.
So yes. So there
Well,
was a
that's a
basis.
selling point right there.
When I discovered it, that was one of the reasons why it's like I'm being pushed towards writing this book, because I feel also it's like you rattled off, Roseanne and Melanie. Other people have done books, and there's been episode guides. So, there's a certain like I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but I do have something I need to get off my chest here. I do have this information that just keeps piling up, and this is something I could get done. I see myself at this stage where, it's like we don't have all the time, but we have some time. And I saw this as something I could get done. And it was very gratifying to know that it, could come out, within sort of this sort of period when other stuff is out there and the show's coming back on Tubi and there's a new record from Rhino made for TV. And my book, Monkeys on TV, the cover is based off of an Italian record compilation that I love from 1970 called Monkeys ITV. So that's where the TV set comes from. But anyway, I know that the big fans would see that, and that would tickle them too. So.
Fantastic. Another thing you mentioned that when the early scripts, this is kind of part one and two kind of a thing, but you said that Davey, Mickey, and Peter stuck to the scripts more, and Mike was constantly referred to as Wool Hat. So part one of that is, have you ever noticed when you are watching the show, and you've probably seen it more than any human's had a right to, through all its incarnations, from videotape to just being a fan to videotape, to getting it on DVD and then again on Blu-ray, which had to be like an amazing thing to like see it in a way that you've never seen it before, right? And all the decisions you had to make sure that it was authentic to what it was, right? But first off, how pissed off do you think Mike would have been to have been like known as Wool Hat only, like after the show? You know what I mean? Because those characters, those names stuck with us, whether it was Mickey Braddock or Mickey Dolenz, right? But the other thing, have you ever noticed Peter Tork often will be mouthing the other character's dialogue?
Yes, I've noticed that. That's
Okay,
something he
so I'm not
does.
crazy.
That's something he does, but it may be so that he, as part of a memorization technique, so because he's got the whole thing memorized and where he's going to come in, and other times he's just sort of being like the annoying kid brother. Mike, as I call him throughout the book, where I would never call him Mike in real life, because he would always say, Andrew, people want to talk to me about Mike. But there is no Mike. Mike is my character on the Monkees TV show. So I would call him Michael a lot rather than Nez, because I felt more comfortable with that. And he was okay with me calling him that. But Mike, he was savvy in so many ways. And it kind of blew me away to watch the show and then see, like, wow, I can see what he's doing here. This is crazy. It's either out of inexperience, fear, or just the sheer bravado that we've always seen from this guy. And he remakes all the lines his own and makes them more natural. And it gives the show kind of a nice complexity where everybody else is sort of a little bit more on book. I think they got crazier in the second season, but he does mention the wool hat thing, that they really wanted to call him wool hat. They kept calling him wool hat. And but same thing, Mickey, was going to be with a EY, and then he was going to be Mickey Braddock in the show, and then that was changed. So we won't talk about Wendell, SJ, and Rick, but those were the original names. I,
Lost to history.
lost to history, but not entirely, because you'll find out more about SJ, Randall, Wendell, and Rick in the book, and what they had planned out. But
See, in my head canon, those are people that make up the Jolly Green Giant groups or the spies. Maybe that is SJ and all those cats. So.
right. Well, one of the members of that group, of one of those groups in the spies, was one of the four, one of the finalists. He's the only finalist who comes back in the show, other
Oh,
than, yeah.
so I wasn't far off. Wow, look at
No,
that.
yeah. I
Bizarre head fan canon pays off.
except for Bill Chadwick, who comes back often as an extra. You'll see him in The Spy Who Came From the Cool and other shows. He was another of the finalists, but as far as having a actual speaking role, that's the only guy who comes back. And then when you I viewed it in a much different way, looking at all those guys in the monkeys pad, and you see this guy who's like, he was almost one of the monkeys, and he's there, and they're successful. I mean, they're unsuccessful in the show. I mean, that's the other interesting thing, is their lack of success in the show, except for in two episodes, The Monkeys on Tour and The Monkeys in Paris. Another show I'm missing a script for, which I don't think there is a script for. And then in Head, they are successful. They're very successful, to the point of it ruining their lives. And they also have a very different pad in Head, which reflects their success. The pad, I go into the detail of why Rifelson picked the stuff that's in the pad, as much as like a sort of insight that he wanted to show that these guys were on the fringe of society, that they were the
Bohemians.
anti-establishment. Yeah. And Peter was like, God, that pad was so dingy, So anyway.
On the other hand, anyone that's living in a beachfront property in California, that's big money. So you almost have to wonder how successful weren't they or were they, if they could afford to live, even though the landlord wanted the money. You know what I mean? That was we only saw that once, I think, right?
Yes. So in reality, it is pushing the envelope, but not as much in that era. You could live near the beach or on the beach, in Venice or Manhattan Beach or some of these other communities, then with a much more meager income. Not no income, but they weren't, those properties had not been bought up and sold a billion times at that time. So
Gentrified and all that.
yeah, so it
We're
wasn't
looking
some
at it more in terms of our reality.
Right. So it's complete, the point is completely taken and totally valid, but I did sort of investigate that as far as what the reality was then. And you could have lived in one of those areas and been
Back then.
yes, not an oligarch or something. Yeah.
It's interesting because I never really put it together, but you are so right. In the movie Head, everyone from Frank Zappa to whoever knows who the monkeys are,
Right.
right? And I'm a huge Beatles fan. This is going to be a second time the movie Help is brought up in this episode, but like you know that they're a band in A Hard Day's Night, and you see them perform, right? And while we see the Beatles perform in Help, we don't see them perform in front of an audience. The only way we know that they're in a band is that the old ladies outside of their apartment or their house, wherever, know who they are. But when they're walking down the street, there's no mobbing of fans. There's nobody trying to rip their clothes off and all the stuff that was a danger in A Hard Day's Night. But other than recording, nobody seems to know who they are
Right.
in that sense. So it's kind of a bizarre thing. It actually just crossed my mind this summer that that's the big difference between A Hard Day's Night and Help, is that we never see that fan connection to the Beatles.
Yeah, I
And
think.
we at least saw it in Head, if nothing else, when they tore the mannequins' heads off. So
Right. I was also having a flash on Head when I was doing the last chapter of the book, Monkeys on Tour, because there's the scene where Davy's singing, I Want to Be Free. Now, all the other monkeys, Rafelson spotlights their solo tunes, Cripple Creek and Can't Touch a Book and I Got a Woman. But with Davy, he decides to have I Want to Be Free. But I think pointedly because he has the footage of a girl being wrestled by a policeman during I Want to Be Free. And it's sort of a foreshadowing of what you're going to see with Circle Sky and Head. And, being that Rafelson put together this particular thing. And one of the editors on the Monkeys on Tour show was a guy who actually went on to work on Thriller and Blues Brothers and a lot of other amazing music things. This was his first credit on a show. So there's other interesting stuff things about that. But I also feel in the we're talking about A Hard Day's Night versus Help versus the Monkees. And this was something that really struck me was that there's a certain joy with A Hard Day's Night that you really is just really comes off the screen with these guys. It's a brand new since they're brand new to success. There's vitality to it. And the screenwriter, Alan Owen, really obviously appreciated the Beatles. Now, there's a real cynicism to the way the pilot script is written by Paul Mazursky and Larry Tucker. They're both deceased, so it was a gig for them. Mazursky said on Fresh Air, the NPR show, we wouldn't have written the script if it hadn't been, it wasn't the story that interested us. We did it because they asked us to do it, and then but we felt we invented it, but they asked us to do it. They thought. Mazursky and Tucker thought the 60s counterculture was really silly. And their cynicism towards it played out in the movies they made after that, like I Love You, Alice B. Toklas. In I Love You, Alice B. Toklas and Bob Carroll, Alice, they sort of turned their nose up at youth culture and stuff because, it was the younger generation that was silly with their dancing and their loud rock music. On the other hand, Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider, who were of the same age, they thought the Beatles were fantastic and they thought youth culture was fantastic. And that's what you saw with them banking their money on Easy Rider. They didn't think it was a joke. They said, man, this is the future. This is where things are going. And so they didn't see the Monkees in the same way. They saw it as a place to put some really great ideas. And that's why I have a lot of respect for them. In
And it
addition,
changed Hollywood.
it changed Hollywood. It was a TV show that changed Hollywood, and then what they were able to do with the money from it changed Hollywood again. So it's an incredible story. Really incredible.
Absolutely. Where can fans pre-order this or order this now?
At beatlandbooks.com, there's also the sort of the designation with my Shopify as well, which either one works. Any road will take you there. But yeah, it's only available from Beatland Books, and the books will be shipping in November. November 10th is the date we have right now, and we're hoping to keep to that. And we have I don't know, 300 or so left of the Flexi Bound and about 500 of the two book sets. I didn't want to make a lot of extra ones because it just there's just no point in keeping it around. So if you want it, grab it now. It's in limited edition, and I will definitely not be making the two book set ever again. This is it.
And that Zilch 15, what does that coupon code get you?
You could get $15 off of any of the Monkees books, or even if you want to buy the Kinks book. If you've already bought the if you pre-ordered the Monkees on TV book, thank you. And if you haven't got Mickey's book or need a new version of the Day by Day or whatever, just take it. It's my gift to you. Thank you so much for all the Zilch listeners and people over the years who have come up to me at the Monkey shows and other things. You've made my life better, so thank you.
So, The Monkees on TV Season 1 from Andrew Sandoval, full, chock full of monkeys goodness. There's the Flexi Bound edition for $84.99, plus shipping and handling, I would imagine. And The Monkees on TV Season 1 Deluxe, two book set in a slipcase there. Do both versions come in a slipcase?
No,
Just the
only
two
the
versions.
deluxe. The other one
Yes.
just comes in a nice outer cardboard box, and the deluxe will come in a nice outer cardboard box, and then they'll be double boxed, So
Right.
people have gotten used to it now. The boxes are decorative too, so.
Well, it's weird because, like, I remember getting the day by day, and it's like, hey, there's a silhouette of the monkeys here. I guess I got to keep that now. Like, if it just would have been an Amazon box. But then again, we are of a generation where we see a cardboard box and go, you know, that could come in handy someday. So you open up a room of someone's house, and there's 10,000 Amazon boxes.
Well, that's one of my favorite jokes in the Froedscaper. Man, what a groovy cardboard box.
Box.
Little
They
did
were
they
ahead of
know.
their time.
Yes, but yeah, I mean, I will say that as a fan making stuff for other fans, I take great delight in, the little details because it's like, what I would want, like the stuff I get a real kick out of, like as a collector, like, oh, look at this, it just makes my heart beat a little faster. So I'm happy to do it. And I really look forward to these coming back and being on the big ship and getting them out to everybody. And, if it all goes well, season two.
Season two, that's what we want. So get that at Beatland Books, and you won't be sorry. We are in the midst of what is the 60th anniversary of the Monkees, right? And here we were 10 years ago, back when Good Times came out, and you and John Hughes and everybody came on the show. It was a great coming together of the tribe. And I felt that very appreciative of you. And all the folks at Rhino and everybody from all over fandom to come together and appreciate what we were trying to do. And I was so glad to have you on the show. When you asked if we could do this, I'm like, yeah, of course, because I do care about you. And I thank you so much for your kindness over the years. It was because of you that I got to meet the monkeys, right?
Oh, thank you.
So
Thank you.
it was great. I mean, there was nothing like walking into that arena up in St. Louis, and Peter Tork is there, and he's talking about, while you guys are on stage setting things up and all that. And he goes, Ken Mills has entered the building. And it was like, it felt like a real Wizard of Oz moment, with trembling knees as you walk down to the stage. And you were all so wonderful. And you've done some great things for Monkees fans. I mean, now that meet and greets are like an expected thing, you made that happen for people that showed up that were Zilch listeners, and we would have Zilch gatherings across the country, and you made it possible for folks to meet not only Mickey and Peter, but also Mark Lindsay and things like that. So it was thank you so much for being part of the Zilch story. As far as
Awesome.
I'm concerned, you're one of us. So
Well, thank
like
you.
it or not, too bad you're stuck with it. Just take it.
It's been my great pleasure, to get to do that and continue on. And, I'm just looking for things, that I can continue to make myself happy and other people happy. And that's what I'm doing with my life. So I'm trying. So.
Well, you got to do something. And one of the things I would recommend is everybody live it. If you're going to have a life, live it, right? I would like to thank you for coming on the show today, and thank you for helping us out. We may do one more show here coming up to talk about 7A's new Davy Jones release, if it's possible, both
Fantastic.
technological and all of that, because we love 7A. We love all the people that have done this stuff. I'd like to talk a little bit about the 60th anniversary and what we've seen so far. And a lot of fans are like, they're not doing anything amazing, but we've got the deluxe version of Good Times. And it is what it is. A lot of Beatle fans are kind of worried about like the Rubber Soul box set that's coming up, right? And we're now going backwards through the if there's ever going to be another deluxe box set after Rubber Soul, right? Where some folks are worried about that because you're getting into a time where if they did like let's say Please Please Me, there's not like 12 different versions and a demo version and a rewrite version. And you know what I mean? It's not a lot to explore. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of everything that wound up on the album was pretty much it.
Well, yeah, I
You know
mean, in
what I'm
that
saying?
case, yeah, I mean, there's multiple breakdowns and, false starts and things like that. But yeah, I mean, that's really one of the other impetus for doing this book was that there's something I could do. You know, I could get unpublished photos that I would spend money on. Whereas, you know, going to the people who do the official projects, they'll be like, why would we spend $10,000 on photos? Like, who's this crazy person who's just a Monkees fan? Like, you know, why do we need to put unreleased material out? Like, I don't get it. Like, these fans are happy with just whatever. And that's never been who I am. So this is my way of being able to do that. But that being said, you know, as fans, we get a little bit spoiled in the sense that we think everything is just for us. But you know, somebody's first record might be the Monkees singles A's and B's or made for TV. I mean, you know, I didn't know the Monkees had an album called Head or Instant Replay or Present or Changes when I was 5 or 6. You can't. It's like the joke of like, you know, seeing a little toddler in a band T-shirt that his parents put on, and you know, some guy saying, "Name 3 songs," you know. So as fans, we need to be a little bit more open-minded and think like, well, we need more fans to keep the Monkees thing going. We gotta, you know, so Rhino doing their thing, 7A doing their thing, Friday Music doing their thing, Mickey's doing his thing. You know, everybody's doing their thing and their version of how they see the Monkees, and I am too. So I think there's room for everybody, I hope. And we all have the choice of whether we want it or not. You know,
Like there's the Monkees made for TV set that Rhino just put out, right? And for me, there's not much there. But to someone that doesn't have the Blu-ray set, or someone that, you know, to somebody that's their favorite new thing this year. You know what I mean? Whatever it
they
is.
may never have, you know, they may not want the whole box set of everything, or they may not know about it, or somebody might give this to them. And it may be the first thing. And I wrote the liner notes for that set. And what somebody said to me there who worked on it was like, yeah, I'm amazed. I mean, you always seem to like come up with some other new thing or something like you know, because people were always like, oh, Rhino said, well, we don't really have any budget for liner notes and we don't really can't, you know, we don't have much room for anything. And I said, well, look, I'll just give it to you. Like, just tell me what you can squeeze in. I want to do something. So in case it's somebody's first record, I want them to have some stuff, you know? So that's the way I always feel about it. It's you never know. You never know what the turning point, you know, when I first heard the Beatles, it was the end of a show that was like my dad was watching a bowling. You know, they played Good Day Sunshine at the end of a TV show. And I was like, what is that? And he goes, oh, that's the Beatles. They have a lot of great songs and we have a lot of their records, you know? And I saw on TV, like the Monkees. And I was like, wow, that's a great song. Wow, that's great. Like, you know, and that's how we all get into stuff. We all have to be more generous, you know, with
Stop
everybody's got to,
gatekeeping.
yeah, exactly. And,
Everyone's got an origin story, whether they're bitten by a radioactive monkey or you just see them on TV.
that's right. It might be a colored vinyl pressing of whatever, the same record we all have, or it could be a new compilation, or it could be a book, or whatever. I just hope it keeps going. And that people, I think that there's what Bert and Bob and Mike and Peter and Mickey and David put together in that show spun off so much great stuff, and we're still talking about it. What could be better than that? You know, much
Agreed,
love to
agreed.
all of them, wherever they are.
Well, you know, we had an interesting discussion on the Zilch Facebook page. A gentleman said, "I can't understand why anyone cares if the Monkees are on Tubi. I can't understand it."
Sure.
And because I have them on videotape and I have the record set DVDs, and I'm like, "Well, you're missing out on Blu-ray, Jack." But not everybody was able to do that. You know what I mean? But it almost became a discussion of like, I just don't understand. I have mine, so why does it matter? Everyone should have this. But if you can't always get that stuff now, you know, not everybody has access to a DVD player, a Blu-ray player, or a video cassette recorder. Hell, and if people do, they probably still haven't figured out how to set the clock on it, right? So,
Well,
you know, it really does
the
come
other
down to
side of the
monkey.
coin is that people think, well, I don't need it because I've got streaming. I don't need to have that anymore because I can just stream it whenever I want. And then they
And
find,
then,
well, the contract with Warner or Sony lapsed and now it's gone. What happened? You know, these terrible people, I thought it would always be there for free and it's not. You know, and that's, you know, it's when we start losing libraries and we start losing, physical items, that means that history gets lost. So I'm all for it being on Tubi. I hope some new fans spring into action and come on board. Maybe Zilch will come back. Who knows? There might be so many people. There'll be the Zilch, the next generation,
There
deep
you
space
go.
monkeys.
With your host, Andrew Sandoval and Tommy B and other people. I'm up
But
for it.
anyway, but that's the dream. That's got to be the dream because look, I didn't see the monkeys in the 60s. I wasn't alive, and
Right.
but if I hadn't picked up on it in the 70s and not let go of it like all the other wonderful people we gave shout outs to, we would be in a much different place. And the monkeys, those four guys, would be in a different place too, because they wouldn't have been singing to the audiences they were, and they wouldn't have, had the comeback in the 80s, or having Good Times be a huge record again. I mean, there's all these things that history, the fans helped the monkeys make their story a totally different history. And that's impressive. I always think about that. It's like the fans decided the monkeys need to be back together. The fans decided the monkeys need to be back on TV. The fans,
Every
it's like,
step of the way.
yeah, exactly. It's a
That's
great,
pun
great
intended from the
thing.
Bullet album. Every
Exactly.
step of the way. The reason that it's important that they're on YouTube and on Tubi and everywhere else is that the old saying of somewhere right now in this world, someone is falling in love with Davy Jones for the very first time, and you hear it, and the sparkling eyes, right? So the stars in their eyes. So that can happen again. Anytime the Monkees did a revival, it was because people saw the TV show. It's just a flat out reality, whether it was on MTV, YouTube, wherever. Somebody, as I said, fell in love with Davy for the very first time again, for the first time now. So,
Yeah, and
this is how it works.
when you were mentioning that, it brought to mind a story. When we were on tour in 2011, it was Davey, Mickey, and Peter, and we had all these meet and greets that we had sold. They had no idea how long it would take to do them and all this stuff. And then we had issues with them and whatnot between the guys and getting them done. We got what we could do done, but there was one where we were at a casino and something, and everybody, in order to make it go faster, everybody got like an autographed CD. And there was a young kid. He's probably, that was 2011, so he's probably not young anymore, right? neither am I. But he walked through and he was with somebody, and there was no, we had just the certain amount of CDs, and Davey saw him and I saw him, and I was like, oh, this kid has to have an autographed record. He doesn't have one. And I went to the other room and I got one made up for him real fast and gave it to him. And Davey looked at me and just gave me the, that's what we do. And that was Davey. That completely inspired me. I knew that that's what Davey would want, because that's how he was with fans. He would give them the shirt off his back. He just loved the fact that he had
Even when
these
that's all
fans.
he might have had at that time, because he
Well,
had some lean
exactly.
years.
Exactly. But no, he no, I mean that was the thing. And but he there was a certain thing within the monkeys, those guys and what they've done. And I'm so proud to have been a part of it,
Fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on the show today. I'd also like to give a shout out to everyone who's ever been on the show and a guest host or a host, from Sarah and Craig and Craig and Craig and no, there were only two Craigs, and Jeff and Melanie and Christine and everybody. Tim Powers is all the people. Thank you so much, Roseanne Welsh. Thank you so much for all of you and anyone that I didn't mention, but you all contributed and you all built something that has lasted longer than any of us ever thought would. And it's never never been the Ken Mills show. I always thought we should be like the Justice League or 60 Minutes, where a bunch of people came together and made something happen. And, you know, it's weird. I have to thank our good friends over at the Monkeying Around podcast, because they are the folks who are actually running the Zilch Facebook page right now. So yeah, please don't give them grief. Love them. Treat them kindly. So thank you, Veronica, Elaine, and Charles. Thank you so much for all the hard work. And I do know that it's hard work when fans start to fight over things that really shouldn't matter, or anytime Davy Jones's bare butt is posted or him smoking a cigarette and somebody goes over and puts a complaint in. How dare you show this? And, you know, it's like Davy knew he was being taken a picture. He's the one mooning the camera. He's the one holding the cigarette, you know. It's not like we chose it, but there are those people who, for them, the Monkees is a certain thing.
Davey loves being an all-round entertainer, let me tell you.
From all angles, apparently. Exactly. That's the thing. The Monkees are what they are to each individual person, and there's a kind of innocent beauty in that. And then the full reality. So shout out to my good friends over at the Monkeying Around podcast. I love you. Thank you for taking on a huge burden, and I know you do it with love. Before we go, let's look at the stats for the new book, The Monkees on TV, Season 1 Again. It comes in two different editions, the Flexi-bound and the Hardbound edition. Both will ship on November 2026. The Flexi-bound edition is limited to 800 units worldwide. The limited Hardbound edition is limited to 1,200 units worldwide. And those are individually numbered and hand-signed by Andrew Sandoval himself. All books are printed on high-quality 157 GSM matte paper. All books are packed in a decorative outer cardboard box and shipped in a second box for safe worldwide transport. Both the flexi-bound and hardbound editions are 534 pages and is heavily illustrated, featuring more than 200 photographs, 72 color, and 140 black and white photos, plus 74 images of rare documents and other memorabilia spanning 1965 to 1967. The book covers the 32 first season episodes of the Monkees series with a detailed analysis by Andrew Sandoval, the original draft scripts, call sheets, cue sheets, and production schedules. It features more than 100 rare images, documents, and memorabilia spanning 1965 through 1967. The limited hardbound edition comes with a bonus book, The Pilot. The bonus book features 206 pages, including 630 rare images shot in November 1965 during production of the Monkees pilot episode. Both books are housed in a unique glossy outer slipcover. All ordering information can be found at www.beatlandbooks.com. You can use the code ZILCH15 for $15 off of these books, or actually any books up there. Wow, that's a mouthful. Okay. Well, so here we go. Thank you so much. That was episode 192 of Zilch, your podcast full of monkeys. Andrew, thank you for coming back on the show, and thank you for thinking of us when you wanted to do this. And I'm glad to be part of your story as well. So God bless you.
God bless you too, Ken. And thank you to everybody out there in the world of the monkeys. You are valued and cherished, and I hope that we continue this story as long as we can, as we go along.
Agreed, as we go along. And as the old song said, we were born to love one another. So be good to one another. Keep monkeying around. Peace and love. Thank you so much. See you next time.
I remember when the answer seemed so clear.
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members, past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burt. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.